Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 71 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Eric Deutsch from the Flash Gordon Minute and Escape from New York Minute. Welcome back to the show after two seasons, Eric.
Yes, I am excited to be in Nakatomi Plaza.
Yeah, well, you know, we're mostly out of Nakatomi in this week, but we're close to it. You know, we're in the proximity. You know, just make sure you don't have any munchies, and you know, things should work. You know, that's what I think, at least. Who knows? So, minute 71 begins with the limo continuing to screech its way around the parking lot to try and find a way out, and ends with more SWAT guys fanning out. So we ended things on Friday with Argyle realizing that he's now being trapped in Nakatomi parking lot, Nakatomi Plaza parking lot, and he needs to figure out a way out. So what he does is the really smart thing. He starts speeding around in the parking lot to try to get out. And, you know, that's really going to help. You know, I like the fact that it just screeches along the way. You know, we heard it on Friday and we hear it today also.
How many exits could there be in this parking lot? I mean, it's ultimately one giant office building. I mean, we have office buildings that have parking beneath them here in New York City. There's really usually is only one place to get in and out of those type of parking places. Now, this is a little more open than being in Manhattan, this building. So, you know, I could see there being more than one. But the way he's frantically driving around, it sure seems to me there's 3, 4, 5 entrances almost that he could be trying here.
And how do you even know where those exits are? Think about it that way. I mean, this is his first day driving a limo. And if he was driving a taxi beforehand, we don't know whether he was driving a taxi in LA or whether he was driving in New York. It doesn't make a difference. Wherever he was driving the taxi, taxis generally don't go into parking garages. You know, if he was driving a taxi, he's dropping someone off out front and he's not going to offer to stick around. You know, he wants to go get his next fare. Here, he knows that he's able to, you know, to charge Nakatomi as much as possible, you know, for this ride, and that's not a big deal. So, I mean, I don't know. I would say there's maybe two exits here. There's the main exit, maybe there's another exit if you go up. But also, we don't know how many levels this is. I'm assuming it's not a very deep parking garage.
I doubt it. Yeah, usually the ones with tons of levels are above ground. The parking garage below ground really are usually, what, 2 levels, maybe 3 at most?
Right, but on the other hand, if you think about it, here we have a building with 30-plus stories of offices. They need a lot of parking spaces there. I mean, again, this isn't
that
New
is
York.
True.
This is L.A.
It is L.A.
In New York, they wouldn't expect most of the people coming to the office to have cars. But in L.A., right, they're going to expect it. So who knows, maybe they have like another parking lot across the street that, you know, that maybe only the executives can park in this parking lot. And then everyone else parks across the street, or maybe they have a ride and park or something like that, or park and ride. Who knows? I don't know. I actually never even thought about it till right now, about the fact that this doesn't look like a very large parking garage. You know,
yeah, this wasn't
say
my notes. This was me just thinking it right now.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's how this works. we do go off the page quite often. You know, thankfully our minds are working along with all of our computer searching beforehand. You know, so that way, I mean, I would say that they maybe have 2 or 3 levels here. That would be my guess about the whole thing. I mean, I was also thinking about, like, at what speed is he driving that limo, you know, in order to frantically try and get out? I mean, obviously there's no way of really gauging that, but, you know, it's a Lincoln Town Car limo, I think, or something like that. But, you know, also, the screeching, do you think the screeching is because it needs to have its brakes fixed?
I think he's just going that fast on hairpin turns, trying to desperately get out of that lot.
Yeah, that's probably true also. Yeah, no, it's just, And I love how he like reaches the exit where the gate, which came down, you know, like weeks ago when we saw it. And there's also, you know, they have that little pole that obstructs the exit that, you know, if you're a big enough car, it's not really going to make a difference, which we'll find out later on, obviously, with the limo. But at this point, you know, just having the pole go up and down, you know, that's the same type of thing that you usually have at like railroad crossings and stuff like that. You know, I think it's more just a reminder that you shouldn't be going, as opposed to, you know, we're really here to try and stop you.
Yeah, well, especially if it's we don't know if this is a pay as you come in or pay as you go out type of lot, also potentially.
My assumption is this isn't a pay lot. This is for the employees. So I don't think it's a pay lot.
And that pole shouldn't even be there then, if it's not a paid lot.
Probably not.
You know?
That's probably true. I didn't think about that from that perspective. That's true. I mean, if you look at the pole, there's like a black box right next to the pole. Maybe it is a pay thing. Wow. It makes me wonder.
Kind of thing. You stick a pay card in or something.
Yeah. Maybe you have to like stick your employee card in there or something like that.
Because
I also think about it from the perspective that, you know, this is 34 years ago. Did they really have, you know, what's the technology that advanced? I mean, obviously they don't have what we have now, where it can read your license plate and stuff like that. But, you know, it's still, you still could use a card, but there is a black box there. Which I think you're right. But the truth is that black box is on the wrong side, unless this is the entrance.
Right. He's so desperate to get out. He might, who knows if he's at an entrance or exit lane right now anyway. He's just trying to find a way out.
That's true. That would definitely be an entrance because of the side that it's on. Because like right now it would be on the passenger side. So it has to be that someone coming in. And the limo moves too fast for us to be able to see if there's something on the other side.
Yep.
You know, to let you out. Yeah, no, I can't. Even when scrubbing back and forth, I can't see it. It's too blurry.
Also, to your point about how we don't know what the technology was back in the mid-80s for this parking, but remember, this is an advanced new building. I mean, we've got touch screens that allow you to know where to go to see the person in the office you're visiting, which, of course, back then was a huge deal.
And to find your zipper.
Yes.
So that is true. You're right. And there's also the idea that, you know, they, in order to lock the front door, they have the key card to lock the front door. That also says something about the technology that they had then. Wow. Okay. The technological advances of the Nakatomi Corporation, which we still have absolutely no idea what they do besides launder bearer bonds. You know, so. Don't know. And then we get a shot of Argyle in the limo, and he looks behind him in order to back up. Now, he actually sticks his head out of the window in order to back up. Have you ever backed up by sticking your head out the window as opposed to just using, you know, that's what the rearview mirrors are for.
Yep.
I mean, I'm a firm believer of using, you know, all three mirrors when I'm backing up or whatever. And when my, 18-year-old son was learning to drive, I taught him to do it that way also. And whenever he would try and use the camera, you know, in the car, I would always cover it up, you know, because I want him to know how to do it. Because I wanted him to learn how to do it if he doesn't have a camera.
I'm taking that for when I have to teach my kids to drive.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. There's certain things you need to know how to do without technology.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that technology is bad. Technology is great. It's great that you have that you can look back and see it and that it beeps and all those things. But what if you're in a car that doesn't have that or it doesn't work or whatever the case is, you want to be able to back up without it. You know, so there you go. A tip for everyone who is teaching their children how to drive. Who would have thought you'd get that on the Die Hard minute by minute podcast? So it's just great watching the way that he's driving. And then we get a shot of a whole bunch of the SWAT guys who start to begin their assault. And we can actually count 12 members. Now, the funniest thing is that a lot of these guys look like they're really out of shape. You know, they do not look like they are the fittest of the fit to be running up this small little hill. So I don't know. It's just pretty funny looking at them as they go through. There's like one guy who really looks like he's huffing and puffing along the way.
Well, it is nighttime. Who knows? You know, there's second shifters maybe.
It could be. It could be. Now, did you see the sign that's on, like, I don't even know what it is. Maybe just a construction beam as they're running by it. It says not hiring, which doesn't make any sense to have that in the middle of this area that they've decided to, you know, to the staging area. You know, the staging area is I guess part of like where the construction all the construction units are kept and stuff like that, because you know the building is under construction. But why would they have a sign there saying not hiring? Is that maybe, you think that's maybe like the front office or something like that, and this way to stop people from trying to come in?
Well, I used to be in I wasn't a construction worker, but I spent a few years working in the construction industry, and there were some times that people would literally just come off the street and go to the construction office and say, do you guys have any jobs? So they could conceivably have that as a way of saying, you know, you can't just walk off the street and get a construction job on this project.
Nah. Okay. See, I just think it's very funny because of the fact that, you know, I've mentioned that some of these guys look like they're pretty much out of shape. So maybe they're trying to tell them, okay, we don't want you.
as we move a little forward further, actually, I see we can answer our own question. There is a Nakatomi Plaza parking sign that mentions the charge of parking there. So you do have to pay to park there.
Oh, wow. I didn't notice that.
It's second 18, if you pause it, $1 for a quarter hour and $10 maximum charge, I think it says.
There you go. I guess you can park there. And then you have van access maximum on okay. Maximum height is six feet 8 inches. And for van access, you need to go to the Avenue of the Stars.
Yep.
Oh, that's really interesting. Wow. And the truth is, if you look at it, the plaque that says Nakatomi Plaza parking on it is a different shade of gray than the rest of it. So maybe they just tacked that on to the, you know, to the Century City. Maybe it originally said Century City parking, and they tacked it on to change that. Wow. And I didn't even pay attention to that. I wrote down that it was 100 and I wrote down 100 and 1,000 and 1,000. I didn't notice the fact that it was the charging for it. So there you go. Yes, you are correct. Now, what's even more interesting is, does that mean that that Argyle can see the SWAT guys and the SWAT guys can see Argyle now?
Well, if there are multiple exits, he, I guess, would have had to have been either he's at a different exit than the one we're looking at now,
right,
or these two things didn't happen at exactly the same exact time
right,
while everything's going on. Because, right, otherwise they would have seen him, he would have seen them.
Right, and he had his lights on. It's not as if he's...
Yeah, he had his lights on. They certainly would have seen him.
Right, and you can actually see there are some cars parked here.
Yep.
And I think most of the time when Argyle is driving, you don't see any cars.
Right.
So I think that actually, I think that answers our question. So the SWAT team begins their assault, and you know one of the guys even looks like he's wheezing a little bit as he's running along. And then we get the shot that one of the shots that you requested this week for, and that's where we get the black SWAT team member, okay, running through the Rose Garden, and he starts screaming, "Ow, Jesus!" Because he
this
got
is so great. Pricked. This is just so great.
Yes, he gets.
I love this moment.
He gets pricked by the thorns in the rose bush. I mean, I've always loved this moment also, because to me it's the idea that here you have the SWAT team. These are supposed to be, you know, the men of the men, you know, the top of the crop, you know, of you know the of the police department, and you have these guys are running through a rose garden and complaining about getting pricked by the thorns.
Yeah, they're assaulting, on an assault. It should be nerves of steel, fully focused on the next step ahead, and it's that thorn. It's such a great deconstruction of the movie trope of the hard edged SWAT teams who go in. It's just so great, and I wonder if that was ad libbed by the actor, or it was just an accident, or if that was planned, because it's such a great moment.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. That's a great question. I will never know the answer to it unless one of us can try and find out who this actor is. Maybe he's listening. If you're listening, extra SWAT guy, extra, who's probably a stuntman on his own. Let us know. We'd love to know if there really is. If you really got pricked by the thorns or not, and if you were told to do it. So what do you know about rose bushes?
Almost nothing. I know roses are what I buy my wife when she likes flowers, and I know that there's thorns on them. I believe in the house I grew up in, I think we had a rose bush, Well, let me rephrase that. We had something with thorns on it in the backyard of my house that I grew up. I'm not sure if they were roses or not.
Okay. That's fair. So the oldest remains of roses that they know about are from the late Eocene Florissant Formation. And they claim that there were roses in Europe even during the early Oligocene, which is the time period that extends back 33.9 million to 23 million years ago. So there have been roses around for a very long time.
Not bad.
Yeah. Now, most of the roses that we know about these days, the garden roses, come from 18th century China. And the old blush group is considered the most primitive, and the newer groups are more diverse. I have absolutely no idea what I just said, because I know nothing about flowers. I don't know enough about flowers to be able to tell you what that means. But how many different species of roses do you think there are nowadays? What would be your guess?
Before I answer that, I just want to say how fascinating it is that there could be a flower that's considered more primitive. That's fascinating to me. I'm going to say the fact that you're asking me means it's probably a very high number. So I'm going to go with 215.
All right, so the answer is anywhere between 140 and 180.
Oh.
So you're a little high there, but that's still pretty good. It's still 180 and 215, considering the span of years, it is possible that it would be even a little bit higher. So, yeah. Now, I couldn't find about the idea about why – how they got thorns and stuff like that. So if anyone knows, let us know, because I couldn't figure it out. Obviously, this SWAT guy could. and the funny thing is, he doesn't just get pricked by one. He gets pricked by two. He first gets pricked on his leg, and then he starts complaining about that. And a second later, he gets pricked on his hand. And, looks as if he's about to take his gun and start shooting into the roses. In order to try and stop
it. It's almost like he's looking back at the soldier behind him, sort of like for sympathy, almost like, hey, did you see what just happened to me? That's not cool.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah, you're right. You get like that fraction of a second where he takes a double take and looks at the guy behind him.
Yeah, or like, he's embarrassed and he hopes he didn't see that he got caught on the thorn.
That could be awesome. Yeah. And then the shot changes, and we get Eddie and Uli in the lobby. They both come from two different sides, and Eddie throws Uli a magazine, and Uli catches it, and you can see the porticlis, one of the porticlises behind them that apparently came down, turned on the security.
Yeah, and I want to say about him throwing the thing to them. I mean, they're only about two steps apart. he could just take two sips and hand it to him, but it's obviously much cooler looking to have him throw it to him while they're moving.
Yeah, it's much cooler, but there's also the aspect that, you know, here they're in a rush.
Yeah.
You know, like, and the funny thing is that, you know, Eddie throws Uli something and then Uli throws something back. It's right. As if they're playing catch. You know, here, take that. There you go. Grab that. And then Eddie goes off to the left. We don't see what he's doing. But Uli comes towards the screen. He's walking towards the right. He puts a clip in his gun. And then he stands behind what looks like a candy counter. Right? And, you know, maybe it's a snack counter of, and I always thought it was just a snack counter. I never thought about it beforehand. But while doing this, I noticed that there's like newspapers behind him and stuff like that. This is like the newsstand. I never thought about where he's doing this.
Yeah, it's a lot of office buildings in the lobby will have a little
exactly.
newsstand. Yeah,
yeah, but yeah. I never thought about it. I've seen this movie literally hundreds of times, and I've never thought about the fact that there are newspapers there. I've seen all of the different things that we're about to be talking about, but, you know, and I also never noticed that there was a payphone behind him also, which seems very much out of place there.
It's not a good location, because if you have to talk on that phone, you're basically getting in the way of the person that's going to be working that counter and anyone that's trying to get in there to get a newspaper.
Correct. So I don't know why they would put that there. You know, I don't know who would try and call. Like, maybe it's a black courtesy phone, you know, paging Mr. Takagi.
That's definitely a payphone. That's definitely a payphone.
No. Yeah, that's definitely a payphone. Very strange place. And then we can see the row of goodies that are sitting inside of this candy counter. All right. So I was able to count 8 different things here. Okay.
I got 10.
Ooh. All right. Well, definitely that's great. So we'll go one by one. We'll go right to left. So we'll start with Raisinets, right? So what do you know about Raisinets? Do you know when
I like raisins, but I don't like Raisinets. But then again, I'm not a big chocolate guy, so.
Okay. Did you are you familiar with raisin? I mean, have you had Raisinets?
I at some point in my life, I definitely tried them because I feel like I know what they taste like, and I know I did not like them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fair. I mean, I'm also not a chocolate person. People think that there's something wrong with me that I don't like chocolate.
Yeah, I get the same thing. Yeah,
and I really don't like chocolate. There's very few chocolate things that I even enjoy. Most of the time, it just disgusts me. Which again, people don't understand what's wrong with me when it comes to that. But basically, so Raisinets were created in 1927 by the Blumenthal Chocolate Company. Okay, which basically what it is milk chocolate covered raisins, right? So, do you know what it's called in Australia?
I do not.
They're called sultanas. Instead of Raisinets. I don't know why. I don't know what a sultana is. I wasn't able to figure that out. But that's what they were called. Now, the company that currently owns the rights to Raisinets, which is called Ferrara. Okay, at a certain point, it was also Nestle that was part of it. They also offered at some point chocolate-covered dried cranberries and dried cherries. But those didn't really work very well. So they didn't continue those.
Yeah, I know chocolate covered cherries are very popular, but usually it's the kind that has like that kind of fluid in there with them. They're not usually dry, but the popular kind.
Right, exactly. So you have the chocolate covered peanut, and basically quite often you also find chocolate covered almonds, chocolate covered macadamia nuts, and you know, sometimes they would put together chocolate-covered peanuts and raisins, you know, in the same packet in order to, I guess you could say, mix and match, that type of thing. So that's what we have for Raisinets. The next thing is Planters peanuts. So what do you know about the Planters peanuts company?
I'm a big fan of Planters peanuts. I've been eating them my whole life. I once met Mr. Peanut. I have a picture of myself with Mr. Peanut.
Ooh, that's very nice. Was he very old at the time?
He had his cane and he had his hat on. He was very distinct.
And his monocle, right?
Yes.
When do you think Mr. Peanut was created? You know, the icon.
I'll say the 50s. He seems like a 50s guy.
It was created in 1916. They had a contest.
Wow.
Yeah. They had a contest and a kid named Antonio Gentile, won the contest by creating the Mr. Peanut. And eventually it was modified by a commercial artist. And obviously they've changed it a little bit over the years. It's not the exact same type of person or caricature as it was in the beginning, but that has changed. So in Planters itself, the company Planters was founded by an Italian immigrant named Amedeo Obisi in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Right. He originally was a bellhop and a fruit stand vendor in Scranton. And then he moved to Wilkes-Barre to open his own company. And he decided to invest in a peanut roaster. And within just a few years, he started by using a horse and wagon. He would sell roasted peanuts, and he became known as the peanut specialist. And then in 1906, he partnered with another Italian-American named Mario Peruzzi. And the two of them decided that they would find a way of blanching whole roasted peanuts. And by doing away with the troublesome holes and skins. And they started a little company with 6 employees, 2 large roasters, and very crude machinery. And within a few years, they had this really, really wealthy company. They eventually moved it in 1913 to Suffolk, Virginia, which is the peanut capital of the world.
Hmm.
Which I did not know that. And I guess you could say the rest is history from that perspective. It was in 1960, it was acquired by a company called Standard Brands. In 1981, Standard Brands merged with Nabisco. And then in 2000, Nabisco was bought up by Kraft Foods. And then in 2015, Kraft and Heinz merged. So it became the Kraft Heinz company in 2015. And then in 2021, they announced that they were going to be selling they would be selling Planters to a company called Hormel for $3.35 billion, which this transaction was completed in June of 2021. Now, what do you know any of the advertising taglines for Planters peanuts over the years?
You'd think I would, since I've been eating them for so long.
Not necessarily.
I guess I don't have to pay attention to their commercials because I know I like them.
Exactly. There's no reason to have to do it. So in the 1930s and 40s, it was known as the Nickel Lunch. In the 1950s, it became known as – it was Planters is the word for good. Okay. In the 1970s, it became America is Nuts for Planters. In the 1990s, Everybody Loves a Nut. See, I always think it was – wasn't there sometimes you feel like a nut? That was for something else. That's
Mounds and Almond Joy.
Right.
Almond Joy has nuts and Mounds don't.
Right, exactly.
Song.
That's right. Right. And then 1992, Peanut Butter with a Crunch. 1997, Relax, Go Nuts. 2003, Put Out the Good Stuff. 2007, Instinctively Good. 2011, Naturally Remarkable. 2016, Deliciously Nutritious. Okay, that one's a little too much. then after that, Harness the Power of the Peanut, A Nut Above, Become One with the Nut, It's Nuts How Good They Are, and The Power is a Peanut. So, see, I remember eating peanuts. I don't know if they were Planters, but I remember as a kid, my grandfather would always take us to, I grew up in New Jersey, and we always went to Asbury Park. And I remember on the boardwalk in Asbury Park, he would always buy us roasted peanuts. And I remember seeing the you know, Mr. Peanut. But that could just be a planted memory. You know, I went to Recall and they implanted these memories of Mr. Peanut. I don't know. No idea if that's a real memory or not from that perspective. I mean, I really did go to the Asbury Park and I did have peanuts, but whether they were planters or not, that I couldn't tell you. So the next thing in line is the Hershey's milk chocolate bars. Now, you can actually see the word almonds on it. Okay, so but right now we'll talk about both. Okay, so do you know when the Hershey bar was created?
This has got to be an old one. Hershey's been around a long time. I'm going to say that this goes back to the 1800s. I'll go 1880s.
Okay, so the creator of the company Hershey's was named Milton Hershey, and he started the company in 1886, and it was known It was known as the Lancaster Caramel Company. Okay, it was a confectionery business, which means he was selling candy, right? And then in 1893, he saw at the World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago, he saw German chocolate manufacturing machinery. And he decided that he wanted to go into the chocolate making business. So he bought himself a machine. And in 1894, he then founded the Hershey Chocolate Company. All right. So the Hershey bar only began mass production in 1899. So you were close. You definitely, I mean, I give you credit for being very, very close with this. All right.
Yeah, and one decade off. Come on.
That's right. No, but also you did get the 1880s with when he started his company. So you're close there from that perspective. All right. So basically you have the two main kinds of Hershey bars, the milk chocolate bar and the milk chocolate bar with almonds. Now, I mentioned earlier that I personally do not like chocolate, but as a kid, I always would still eat the milk chocolate bar with almonds. I actually tried one not long ago, maybe a few years ago, and it really disgusted me. It was too much chocolate. It was too much chocolate. I don't understand how as a kid. Maybe they had more almonds in it when I was a kid. I don't know. You know, so the milk chocolate bar, as I said, came out in 1899. And the one with the almonds, they started producing in 1908. So just and they're still both going very strong over the years. So then we move on to the next box, which is Nestle Crunch. Do you know anything about the Nestle Crunch?
When I was a kid and I actually did eat chocolate, Nestle Crunch was one of my favorites. Once I became an adult and I lost my interest in chocolate, obviously I stopped eating that. But yeah, this was one that I ate a lot as a kid.
Right. Okay. I've also eaten a few Nestle Crunch bars as a kid because it's milk chocolate with crisp rice. So it's basically Rice Krispies with milk chocolate around them. And so when do you think the Nestle Crunch bar was first introduced?
So Nestle as a company, I'm sure, has been around a long time. The Nestle Crunch bar, I will put this, let's go the 1920s.
1938.
I keep being off by one decade.
Okay, but that's still pretty good. You're you're not hundreds of years off.
That's true.
You know, so basically what they have there, it was in England, they started calling it the Dairy Crunch. And then in the 1990s, they decided to rebrand it as Nestle Crunch. So that's the same thing that everyone else gets. They in 2013, they announced that they would start using 100% certified cocoa beans. Which makes me wonder what they were using beforehand, if they're announcing that now they're going to use 100%. It was in 2018 they actually announced that they were selling their American rights to everything to Ferrero SPA, which is what we mentioned earlier. With the Raisinets, you know, that Ferrero was they sold it for $6.9 billion. And therefore,
People
and
love candy.
yeah, seriously. And Ferrero then turned everything into, into their own brands. You know, they just added, instead of it being Nestle, it's now Ferrero candy, And basically, the sale was rumored to be because of the low growth in the mainstream chocolate market due to newer competitors such as Kinder and the increased variety of snacks, making it challenging for mainstream chocolate bars like the Crunch. And what they basically sold to Ferrero were the Crunch Bar, the Butterfinger, Nerds, Laffy Taffy. They used to sell them wrapped in a bar of aluminum foil. That I remember also, and we'll get to see
Yeah, I
that in
remember
a
that.
we'll get to see that in a few minutes also. And instead of using paper, but they basically changed it, and now they have polyester film on them instead. So that's with the Crunch Bar. So let's move on to the next one. We have the Mars Bar. What do you know about Mars bars?
I've never eaten a Mars bar. The company itself is called Mars, to the best of my, or at least was at some point, to the best of my knowledge.
Yes.
So I don't know what is in it at all. As far as guessing when the Mars bar would have been created, because it's the name of the company, it means it probably was one of their first, if not their first bar. So let's go the 19-teens for that one.
Okay, so in 1932, the Mars Incorporated Company in England was created by a man in Slough, England. Slough. It was created by a man named Forrest Mars Sr. And the Mars bar is a chocolate bar consisting of caramel and nougat covered with milk chocolate. It took a very long time till it actually made it to America. And they actually stopped making an American version of it in 2002. And then they changed it and started calling it Snickers Almond. So yeah, that's the Mars bar. So now, okay, the last three that I can see, okay, are all about gum. So
Right.
what are the other two that you apparently can were able to make out that I couldn't figure out what they were?
So behind the gum, there are two boxes.
Yes.
The one on the far left, I'm 99% sure, is Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. I'm basing that on the color of the box, and also it looks like you can, once the camera zooms in, you can see the beginning of the word peanut. It looks like P, you can see the PE, and underneath it, maybe you can see the beginning of the word like BUT for butter. And since Reese's is like one of the few types of chocolate I like, I'm fairly confident that that is either a knockoff or Reese's Peanut Butter Cups itself. Next to that is a box that's got like a red and white stripes on it. It looks like it says something chewables. I couldn't quite make anything else out, but it's clear, but maybe some kind of like chewy type of like a Charleston chew type of thing or something like that.
Oh wow. Okay, no. So the other one I can't figure out, but about the Reese's peanut butter cups, I think you may be right there. It could be that might be Reese's pieces,
Could be Reese's Pieces, yep.
Right. So when do you think Reese's peanut butter cups were created?
See, I should know this because everyone who knows me knows this is like the one kind of chocolate I like. Let's see. Boy, lately everything's been in the 30s, huh? So let's go back to the 1930s again.
All right, very close to 1928.
Ah.
November 15th, 1928, by H.B. Reese, who was a former dairy farmer and was a shipping foreman for Milton Hershey. He left his job at Hershey to start his own candy business. Okay, and Reese's is now part of Hershey's. So it actually makes more than $2 billion in annual sales for the Hershey Company. Wow. And it's Reese's peanut butter cups are the number one on the list of top selling candy brands.
I think I'm responsible for about a third of
That's pretty impressive. You seem to
that.
I still remember all the commercials with your chocolate is in my peanut butter and your peanut butter is in
Right.
my chocolate.
Sure.
Those things. So yeah, that really works. So we got 9 out of 10. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're left with three left that are three different types of gum. All three of them are from the Wrigley Company. I remember them very well from growing up in the 80s that we would have all three of these. I don't know if I'm assuming they still make all three of them. I don't think they're as popular as they were back then for some reason. I could be wrong. But so the first one you get is the green one, which is double mint. Okay, do you know what the flavor of double mint is?
Isn't it spearmint type of gut, right? Spearmint flavor?
Peppermint.
Peppermint, okay.
Right. It is called double strength peppermint flavored. And what year do you think that they launched the advertising campaign for double mint when they started making it?
Now I'm wondering if you're if there's a pun there that you focused on the word double mint there. So something double 1900 because there's a double zero in
No, sorry. I didn't mean that at all. So it was
it. I don't know. All right,
1914.
still
But
close
I
again.
mean, what they did with their advertising over the years was they would have identical twins.
Right.
Beginning in 1939, they started having advertisements with different twins. I remember in the 80s, lots of commercials for Double Mint gum with groups of teens, of teenage twins. All together and stuff like that. I mean, I found a list of all the different main models they used, but I don't think it really makes a difference. The only one that I found of any interest was that two of them from the 1980s were Jean and Elizabeth Segal, who were the sisters of Katie Segal from Married with Children. And they actually tried making their own sitcom called Double Trouble in 1984, which I think I actually even remember that sitcom. I don't remember much about it, but it didn't really work very well
And
along the way.
the Double Mint ad campaign was big enough that it got a reference in
That
Spaceballs.
is correct. That is correct. They had Denise and Diane Gallup, who spoofed those roles in the Mel Brooks film Spaceballs. You are correct. So then we move on to the yellow gum known as Juicy Fruit. Now I want to go back to Double Mint. I remember all of those commercials, and I know that all three of these brands had songs to them. I can't remember the song for Double Mint. I remember it was Double Your Pleasure with Double Mint Gum. That slogan I
Yes.
remember, but I don't remember the song itself. I'll have to look it up and I'll put it in the group so that people can see it. Once I when this F when you're listening to this episode, you should see those already also. So the next one is the yellow one, which is Juicy Fruit, which again I also remember the song really well. It's
Oh,
like stuck in
yes.
my head.
Grab your boogie board, take a stick of juicy fruit. Taste is gonna move you.
Yeah, that's right. And so what year do you think that one was created? If we
That
so
probably came
so
after
if we said
Double Mint
the
Gum
Double Mint was
Snacks, so
1914.
yeah, I'm gonna say Juicy Fruit came after that, so I'll go 1920.
Well, you would be wrong. It was actually much before. It was in
Wow.
1893.
Oh, wow.
Right. And apparently they say that 99% of Americans are familiar with the name brand of Juicy Fruit, and that in 2002 they sold 153 million units of Juicy Fruit gum. Now, do you know what the flavor is?
I should because I'm not a, I haven't been a gum chewer since in a many years, but when I was, Juicy Fruit was the gum that I chewed for the most part, and it was just sort of like fruit punchy kind of to me. I don't know, I could never like identify the specific fruit though.
Yeah, I had the same issue. I mean, as a kid, I loved both Juicy Fruit and Double Mint. Those are the two that I would always. I remember also you'd have like the long pieces of gum, and they would fold up as you put them into your mouth. That type of thing. And so they claim that it is a mixture of banana and pineapple. And some people stayed.
Which is funny because I don't like bananas or pineapples.
There you go.
I loved that gum.
There
That's
you go.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And they say that it resembles something known as jackfruit, which I don't know what that really is.
I don't know what that is either.
And there are rumors that peach is also a crucial flavor that they have in there, meaning that they basically throw in a whole bunch of different artificial fruit flavors into this. And then the final one that we get here is Big Red. Okay, now Big Red, I don't remember chewing Big Red as a kid, but I definitely remember the commercials. You know, because the whole idea of the commercials of Big Red. Well, okay, first of all, do you know what flavor Big Red is?
It's cinnamon, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And do you know when it was introduced?
1924.
1975.
Wow. Nope.
Yeah. Seriously.
That's my birth year. All right. I'm just as old as Big Red.
There you go. I'm 1 year older. There you go. And basically, the commercials that they would have in there. Okay, they used this jingle from 1977, 1998. When I was doing research for this, I kept thinking of the song. I'd never thought about it. I haven't thought about it in years. And most of the commercials depicted couples passionately kissing in a romantic setting for an unusually long time, always including one kisser who then must chase his departing ride. You know, like people have to run after the train or something like that. I remember it was like, you know, kiss a little longer.
Right.
You know, because the whole idea is that the flavor lasts longer and stuff like that. So I'll definitely find some of those commercials also and put them up because those are very nostalgic for me to think about at this point. Do you know in the movie Talladega Nights, the Ballad of Ricky Bobby? So they had Ricky Bobby, you know, played by Will Ferrell. He did a commercial for Big Red, and he basically said, "I'm Ricky Bobby. If you don't chew Big Red, then f*** you." That's basically all the different things that we found in this cabinet of candy that are in front of Uli. So now he stands there. He puts his gun down on the snack counter. And I love the look on his face because he takes out like six magazines from of ammunition. He locks and loads his gun. And then we see him like look down at the candy display before him, below him. And then he looks up and then he looks down again. And then he looks to the right, he looks to the left and then down again. And then, you know, to make sure that like nobody's looking at him, like Eddie doesn't see that what he's doing. And then he slowly slips his hand into the, you know, into the counter in order to possibly take something. Now, I wonder how many people, you know, on first viewing, we'll notice this type of thing. I doubt I noticed it first viewing. This was something that I noticed much later on. You know, this to me was always on the same level as the bet between Carl and Theo.
Oh yeah, of course, sure.
Yeah, of course.
Although
but
not first viewing, I didn't notice.
Exactly, that's the thing. These are like that's one of the things I love about this movie is there's so many things going on in the background. You know, like we talked about earlier in this episode. You know, with the rose bushes and stuff like that. These are things that you don't notice and they just like jump out at you. You know, when you've seen this movie numerous times and stuff like that.
This with the candy. This I actually did notice the first time I saw the movie, and this this is actually the reason I requested this week of minutes was Uli taking the candy.
Yeah, for sure.
I just like this is like in a movie that is filled with like lots of great humorous moments, like the guy in the thorns, like the bet. This is my favorite of all of them because like in this scene right now, he's basically all of us. Like who wouldn't do that? You're sitting there, it's time to fight. Not just yet. There's all this candy in front of you. You know, even cold-blooded killers and thieves get hungry and get distracted, you know?
That's
and
right.
I think that one of the things this movie does much better than most movies, and one of the reasons why it's such a popular movie is it humanizes the villains a lot. There's a lot of these little moments throughout the movie that really do humanize the villains, and this is one of those moments.
Yeah, and it's more than just humanizing the villains because it also, you know, the idea that John McClane is in every man, you know, he's not like a pumped up action hero, at least not in this movie. Later on, in some of the subsequent movies, that he gets more like that. But in this movie, he can be any of us, or we can be him. You know, that type of thing. It's just your typical detective, you know, stuck in a high rise and having to deal with the terrorists. You know, but it's not like he's not superhuman. And
Right.
that goes along with the same theme that both the good guys and the bad guys are like that here. You know, which is great. And I think they do an amazing job of putting that together here. But so at this point we get another shot of the limo, and we finally see that it screeches to a halt completely in the middle of the parking lot. You know, like he's given up. He's had enough. He's not able to deal at all with the fact that he's, you know, got nowhere to go. And it just stops right in the middle. And at this point, we once again get to see outside the SWAT guys. You know, we see them getting into position. And as they're about to get into position, that's when the minute ends. So, I mean, there isn't that much that happens in this minute, but obviously we had a lot to talk about. So, is there anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
just one, adding to the humor of the scene of him looking up and down and making sure no one's watching him with the taking the candy bar, the music changes and has this great little funny little musical cue when he finally makes the decision of, yes, I am going to take a candy bar and eat it now. And again, just, you know, a perfect touch of adding that. Just a few seconds of that, like, piano there, that little goofy piano, enhancing the scene.
No, I did have that in my notes also. I forgot to mention that too. Yeah. No, the music in this whole minute, the music is great because there's so much going on. You know, there's so many cuts, and each time the music, either sometimes it just flows through the various cuts, but sometimes it keeps changing for each cut also, and they do that really well. You know, it gives more of a personality to the to the various scenes here and stuff like that. Yeah, no, that's a great point. Thank you for mentioning that. So the script of this scene, the truth is, nothing in this minute appears in the script. Absolutely nothing. There's no SWAT guys running through the thorn bushes. There's no Uli and Eddie, you know, getting ready to shoot. Or preparing the way they prepare. They, you know, we'll get to a point where they will prepare, but not the same way. But so it's very interesting that this must have been something that they decided on the spot. Let's add all of these little scenes in here to show what's going on.
Sure.
And they do a very nice job of that. So every Monday we have a segment called Die Hard on a Monday, where my guests will give their top five Die Hard doppelganger movies. So, what have you got for us, Eric? Start with number five and work your way up.
Oh, okay. Well, with number five, I'm gonna go with, even though it's not, I was a little loose with the definition, but still, I think you'll see the common through line. Number five, I had to go with one of my own Movies by Minute shows that I co-hosted, Escape from New York. Even though he's in a whole city, not in one building, it is Snake Plissken basically alone versus the entire Manhattan prison. And it is a very, there's a lot of claustrophobic scenes in that movie as well, where he's inside buildings and he's captured. So I think it fits the definition.
Okay, great.
Number four, essentially any Liam Neeson movie made in the last 15 years, where it's just him alone against, you know, fill in the blank group of evil people that has done something that he needs to, for some reason, only on his own can he fight them on.
Okay, but if you were to pick one, what would that be? Because you know,
Ooh.
I give points to, you know, we're gonna go through this at the end and see who, you know, which movies have the most points. So,
Let me go with, I'd have to look at the name, but there's one where he's like driving a snow cat and he's got to fight a bunch of people and involves like snow and he's like a snow cat driver or something like that. I'd have to look up the name of the movie.
okay, all right. We'll get back to that in a
Yeah.
second then.
Number three, I'm going to go with before there was the MCU, when Marvel movies were made sporadically, I want to go with the Thomas Jane version of The Punisher. And I think it's a very underrated movie. The mob led by John Travolta kills an entire family, and so he goes on a quest of revenge and takes out the entire mob by himself. Number two, I'm going with what to me is the most Arnold Schwarzenegger movies of Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, Commando, where he goes to an unnamed island somewhere in Latin America and kills an entire army all by himself.
Yeah, was it unnamed? Wasn't it Valverde?
Or maybe it was Valverde. That's right. I'm sorry. Yeah. Or I should have said fictional Latin American island. Yes. That's what I should have said. Yes. And number one is not a movie. It is actually an episode of a TV show, Star Trek Next Generation episode called Starship Mine, where Captain Picard is trapped alone on the Enterprise with a bunch of criminals. The entire rest of the crew is down on the planet. And one by one, Captain Picard has to take out the villains until the very end on his own. And it's even been referred to online as Die Hard on a Spaceship.
Yes. Now, I got to say, this is an episode that I had seen before. But one of my previous guests from one of the, I think, week four, he chose this as one of his movies. And I actually then went and rewatched it. And I can understand why it would be called Die Hard on a Starship. There's absolutely no question about that. There's a reason for that. Now, were you referring to the Ice Road?
Yeah, I think that's it. The Ice Road.
It came out in 2021.
Oh no, then it's an older movie. It's from a few years before that. It is called Cold Pursuit.
Okay, I'm assuming I've probably seen it because I've seen most of these type of movies. Ah, okay, Cold Pursuit. That was 2019.
2019, yeah.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I did see this. I actually liked it. Right. All right, excellent. Now, do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. So I co-hosted Escape from New York Minute and Flash Gordon Minute. Those are both on any podcatcher out there. If you want to binge them, they've both been finished for a few years now. Both still have Facebook pages. Both still have Twitter feeds. So you can certainly contact me through either one of those. I still check them.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. All you have to do is a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.